Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. My name is Dave Kubikian.
Good morning, everyone. Phil Vacchio here.
Hey, Phil. Phil and I are two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm, and we're here every single weekend talking to you about estate planning and Medicaid planning, wills, powers of attorney, healthcare proxies, a little bit of a potpourri today, I think.
Yeah,
we got a lot,
like a lot
in store. And it's a call-in show, so you can interrupt us whenever you feel like it, or if you just want to talk to John Gabriel, and who doesn't want to talk to John Gabriel?
I wanted to ask you about your Smokey the Bear cap.
Yes.
That you're wearing this morning.
Yeah. It says only you.
It's only you.
I got it at a store that's much too hip for me. It's like a hipster store, and they had a cool little hat.
Smokey the Bear's back in
he's everywhere
public eye. Yeah.
You can't even go down the street without hearing about Smokey.
Wow, I didn't realize he's making a comeback.
Only you.
It's a call-in show, and 518-476-5900. If you got something that's a little more specific and you don't want it through the airwaves, you can call us at one of our offices in Albany, Clifton Park, Saratoga Springs, are down in Kingston at 518-465-7581. Always a tricky number to remember when the radio is a similar number. Phil, let me ask you a question. When you come in to radio on your way here,
sure.
Do you listen to the radio?
This station in particular?
Right.
I do. It puts me in the mood.
I do as well. I like hearing John's voice. Wonderful voice, by the way.
Thanks. Oh, I've been
about 20 minutes ago. You were playing the Righteous Brothers.
Yeah.
And I started thinking to our conversation we had last week, because I said, you know, Righteous Brothers, you lost that love and feeling.
Right.
Top Gun.
Yeah.
Top Gun 2, which I haven't seen. I actually saw it.
Oh, very good movie.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, very good. You both.
Well, I kind of saw it.
See that?
Someone next to me on a plane was watching it, so I saw it without the sound. I get the gist of the whole thing.
I feel that's like enough I saw for it. You.
I think so.
Right. Okay.
And I was just thinking, this guy does his own stunts. All the Mission Impossible stunts.
Yeah, he does.
Tom Cruise.
How did he look? How old did he look when you saw the movie?
Well,
he still looks sick. He's in great shape.
He looked good.
Very impressive.
Obviously, work done.
Yeah.
Well, I think.
Yeah.
But he's 61. And we were talking about Harrison Ford being 80.
Yeah.
So I feel like 61 is like a teenager compared to Harrison
Ford.
61
is very young, especially nowadays. I tell my clients, they love to hear it, but I'm being serious when I say...
When
you're
they say
young.
They're like, they're 76, and you're like, oh, well, you know, if you were older, we would do that. I had a conversation actually yesterday about a life estate deed where the idea was maybe mom's going to do a deed to the kids and retain what's called, you know, this life estate, the life use.
Sure.
And I was like, well, you know, I think you might be a little too young for it because, God willing, you got another 2 decades with you.
Yeah. You know? She'd probably like to hear that, right?
Yeah. And, you know, the negatives on life estate deeds are that, you know, the longer you're around, the worse the things, you know, worse things can happen to your remainder people, your kids. And all of a sudden, you know, it sounds good when everyone's all right. We're going to leave a house to 2-3 kids. We don't want it to be the estate of one of the kids if, God forbid, something happened.
Sure. And speaking of life estates, just because you brought it up, I have a good example of where it didn't work out so well. A client this week transferred his home. It's a second marriage, right? So transferred the home to children and with a life estate and wants to undo it now. And I had to be the one to tell him that you cannot undo that without their cooperation. Because when you do a life estate deed, you're actually transferring an interest to individuals. And to undo that, those individuals will have to sign off. So it works in some occasions, but there's often better options, in my opinion.
We have a caller.
Okay, yeah, Charles is on the phone. He's sounds like he's in the car, and not quite sure what Charles wants
Hello?
To know. So, Charles, are you with us?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, my friend.
Yeah, I just got a legal question, so to speak. I live out here in Schoharie County.
Okay.
And I just read in the paper, we just had a public county property auction for the foreclosures, and then probably 2 months after that, I read that the county is just giving a piece of property to an individual because they say, well, that's the only way that they feel that it could be put back on the tax rolls. And it's kind of contradictory to me because I was just wondering, there should be equity. If they want to give it to him, why won't they give it to me? I mean, what are the stipulations that they have? And I was just curious, is the can the county arbitrarily, capriciously pick winners and losers?
Well, thanks for the call, Charles. And, you know, forget you. I want the property to go to me. Why should it go to you? If they're given property, I'll take it. You know, I don't really know. It's obviously not our specialty. I think that there's this concept in law where they want to make property be as productive as possible. So sometimes, for example, the government can come in and take a property called eminent domain, yep. And it's because your use of the property is not as good as their use of the property, which is going to be some sort of highway or something like that. So I would probably think that's part of the you know, if there's no buyers there, they do need someone to eventually be paying taxes on it. They could then quickly assess it for fair market value and get it back on the roll. I guess that's it, but I'm just guessing. I have no idea, Charles.
Yeah, okay, I mean, the government could give any excuse.
It wasn't a property auction, and then they pulled it.
Yeah.
And then DEC was involved, but it just seems to me that there's not equity. Why do they pick winners and losers?
It's a good question. I have the same question. I don't have any answers for you, though, Charles. Thanks so much for the phone call. That, you know, it's tricky. I'm sure there's more to it.
Well, that's usually the case. You know, someone brings you a scenario, and there's probably a lot of fact patterns that we don't know going on there. So it's hard to say what the reason is.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to talk about a kind of a sweeping fact pattern, Phil, that touched on a lot of stuff. We were talking about it and how it's kind of like a law school final exam. So, John, I don't know if you know about law school final exams, but normally it's a fact pattern and you're supposed to spot all the different issues in that fact pattern.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
And you're going to say, oh, well, you know, this is going on and that's going on. And then you kind of analyze it a little bit.
Right.
I've suppressed those memories. I don't know why you're bringing that back up.
Apparently, it's not a fun final exam.
My therapist says it's good to bring up things like this from time to time.
Let's look it out.
Oh, okay. Well.
So the fact pattern is this. There's a husband and wife. I'm not going to say they're elderly because they're just getting older. And they're probably in their late 70s, early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Husband has dementia, and he's got it pretty good. He lives in a facility, and they have a long-term care insurance plan.
Great.
Okay. And their plan is a type of plan that's considered a New York State partnership plan.
Wow. Very rare nowadays.
Very rare. So do you mind telling everyone what that means, a New York State partnership plan?
Sure. So, well, first of all, no insurance companies offer these anymore.
Correct.
So don't, you know, when you hear this, don't get excited because you're not going to be able to get one. But those clients who do have one usually got them years ago and they kept them. They got grandfathered in. But typically how they work is you purchase an insurance policy for long-term care and it has some kind of partnership with New York State where the long-term care insurance will cover a certain amount of long-term care services such as nursing home or home care. And then when that policy runs out, it's guaranteed that at least part of or all of your assets are protected and Medicaid will kick in depending on the type of policy you got. There's different levels that you could purchase. I've seen those a handful of times.
My parents have one.
That's great. Were you involved in that prior to practicing law?
Prior to everything. And I always mention that to people when they're considering long-term care insurance, because we're not just like dealing trusts left and right.
Right.
We just want to have a really good plan. And one of the things missing in their plan, so they have a lot of long-term care coverage. Thank God, because this gentleman has a lot of long-term care needs, right?
Yep.
And they have that back-end protection you're talking about. So we know that she's not going through all her money to take care of her husband. So that's great. Their plan, in terms of estate plans, Phil, is just a will, power of attorney, and health care proxy.
So we call it basic estate plan, right?
Basic estate plan.
Yeah.
And this happens a lot when people have long-term care insurance because they think, well, I figured it out. That's it.
Yeah.
And forget the fact that there's annual premiums and whatever. They're all different makes and models. None of the long-term care insurance policies help you with avoiding probate. Okay. And so the conversation that I had with mom about a month ago was, well, I'm sorry to hear about your husband. Thankfully you got this policy and his care is situated. I think it's time, because you guys are a lot older than you were last time you were here, to think about maybe a revocable trust. There's four kids in the fact pattern. So I kind of ruled out that life estate deed for a couple different reasons. And we started talking about the trust, and we started talking about the property. And this is a property that her husband's grandfather built.
OK. Okay, so a family property.
Been around forever.
Yeah.
Not just a house, but a lot of acreage around it. And the kids all enjoyed growing up in that house. Four kids, they're all grown up, all doing well. Some of them have different opinions as to where that property should go one day. And mom and dad's plan in their will, Phil, was if someone wants to buy it, there's a little bit of a discount. Mm-hmm. We'll go off of an appraisal to figure out what fair market value is, and you buy out your siblings, and that's that.
That's a little incentive to have someone keep it in the family, which is not a bad idea.
And, you know, this reminds me of one of the questions you brought up last week, which is, you know, these camps and water camps, and
sure.
It's the type of property you want to keep in the family, right? So in this case, we had a family meeting, mom and the four kids and myself, to talk about the property and to talk about who wants it, does anyone want it, can anyone afford it?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a certain reality when mom and dad are still alive. I have this with my parents. They have a lake property where I'm not bearing a lot of the burden of the maintenance, of the cost of the maintenance, of the taxes, of anything, because mom and dad are still here.
Right. So you're just getting the pure enjoyment factor. That's, you know,
yeah.
And that's great, right? That's what you see.
Hey, Karen and Colleen, hold on just a second, okay? We'll be with you in like 1 minute here. You know what? Actually, I scratched that because I'm seeing that we're going to be up against the break in a couple minutes. So, Karen and Colony, how are you? Good morning.
I'm fine. How are you?
What's going on?
So, if you have an irrevocable trust and it's not working out, can I transfer it to one in your, you know, for you guys to assist me to have a irrevocable trust? That's the first question. And the second is, I'm younger, but older person, is there any circumstances when you can take it out? Say that you need to get a new car, you're in a car accident and you need a new car. Could you take that money out of that irrevocable trust?
Okay, wonderful. We can help. So I assume that the trust is a New York trust. It's governed by the rules of New York, and somewhere deep in the boilerplate at the back of that thing, it'll say the situs of this trust is New York State, governed by the laws of New York State. The reason that's important, Karen, is because in New York State, every single trust is actually revocable. Even irrevocable trusts can be undone. And New York State says if all interested parties, I'm doing air quotes here, so you could do air quotes with me. If all interested parties agree, you could do whatever you want. Well, Phil, who are the interested parties to a trust?
Well, it depends on what the trust says, right? Typically, there's the trust creators.
Yep.
There are the trustees.
Yep.
And there are those that are interested in as beneficiaries of the trust. But that includes both the direct beneficiaries and what we call contingent beneficiaries.
Yeah. So that's everybody, right? So we need everybody involved to agree. And if we want to undo this thing entirely because we're sick of it, and we don't like it, if we want to undo it partially.
That's the main reason I'm doing it. I have specific problems that I don't want to discuss online, but if there's specific problems, they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Gotcha. So that gets us to the second part. So if we get everyone involved, like Phil said, to agree, we can do whatever we want, right? Well, we don't control those people. Those are other people, right? It's an irrevocable trust, so those are, by definition, other people. In our trusts, and that's why we would want to look at the trust, in our trusts, we know that our clients, the creators of the trust, can unilaterally amend the trust. They could change the trust to change who their beneficiaries are or their contingent beneficiaries. And they can amend the trust to change their trustees. So in our trusts, 99% of the time, our client is a puppet master, and those trustees that Phil mentioned, those beneficiaries that Phil mentioned, are just little puppets. And if our client wants to pull money out to buy a car, if our client wants to get rid of the trust altogether, if our client wants to reword the trust because they're not happy with what the trust says or what the trustees mm-hmm. are doing, they can do it because they control the other party. So as a crazy example, you could amend your trust to make John, Phil, and I your trustees and beneficiaries for a second, and we just sign off on whatever you want.
Right. So what you're saying, Dave, is if one of those parties won't agree to sign off, we take them out. Remove them from the trust so they don't have to sign off.
Yeah, they're puppets. They only dance when we want them to dance.
Exactly.
Karen, hold on just a second, okay? We're going to be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Show right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston. Our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Harry, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office, 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Hello, everyone. Phil Vacchio here.
Dave Kubikin here.
So we were just had a caller, Karen, on the line, and
we still have her here if you guys want to.
Karen, you still with us?
Yeah.
Yes, I am. The thing is, do you have to have us tell someone the reason for it? I mean, maybe your car is just old and you need to trade it in. I mean,
forget the reason, Karen. You can do.
Okay, that's what I want to know.
Yeah. Whether you want a car, you need a car, you don't need a car, it doesn't matter. You, in at least in our trust, and that's where we always got to do this caveat, right, Phil, which is, if you did a trust at our office, Karen, at least we know what the rules are. We know what it says.
Yeah, we know what ours say. We'd have to review that particular trust, Karen, but if it's written in the proper way, the point is that you maintain that control that you're referring to, what you want to do. But, Yeah, if you're interested, feel free to call our office. We can take a look at the document and let you know what your rights are.
Every time you take money out, is there a charge for that?
Well, there's some legal documents that do need to be prepared. We want to memorialize if you want to remove something from the trust and it's an irrevocable trust. We need those signatures. We need to prove that there was agreement of all those interested parties. So typically we prepare something called a partial revocation. Sometimes we're amending the trust before we do that. We have a lot of clients, Karen, who have charitable intent. They're going to leave some money to a great cause or St. Jude's Hospital or something like that. We're certainly not calling St. Jude's because our client wants to take money out of their trust. We'll amend that trust to remove that charity for a moment, and then amend it to put it back in. So there might be some fees associated with. What I would recommend to you is to come in. It'll be a free consultation just to go through that trust to see what you can and can't do and see if there's a way to accomplish your goals without even revoking the trust at all. Let's see.
And just to add to that briefly,
Dave.
Can I just
ask one last thing? The person that you put in charge, are they able to take, like say you're in a hospital and you never agreed to it, can they take out any amount of money they want without your permission?
It depends on what the trust says. It's going to go back to that. I know we keep repeating that, and it's probably not what you want to hear, but it's a trust-specific question, how the trust is drafted. Okay. Sometimes trusts do give rights to make distributions to other people like beneficiaries. So.
Okay.
Karen, thanks so much
for your phone call. Bye-bye.
Bye. You know, depends is an answer we give a lot.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Listen, because it often does. But you're not going to find many lawyers who speak in finalities.
Well, certainly not on the radio. I mean, there's certain finalities we can't speak about, but you know, the intricacies of what Karen's trustee could do in a specific situation really depends on what that trust says. It depends on if Karen has a power of attorney and that person's acting as a power of attorney. Normally, you know, the exception I take with what Karen said is that she said the person you put in charge, right? What could they do? And I would say, no, Karen, you are, if it's one of our trusts, Phil,
right,
Karen is still in charge. She's the boss.
Right. And that's key.
Right. She's a big shot in the back of the car and her trustee is the chauffeur driving her around.
And the question that Karen asked, you know, do I have to pay any fees to take money out? And I don't want to say you have to pay fees, but the reason to do these things correctly and legally is because usually you do a trust for specific intents, specific purposes, and you would hate to do something that would void that trust and those goals that you had are now null and void, right?
Yeah.
So you want to do it the right way. If you're going to change a trust in some way or you want to take money out or move money around, it's always wise to speak with an attorney first to make sure you're doing it the right way.
Yeah, and to just give an example of that, and I think we talked about it last week as well. If the reason why she wanted to pull money out of the trust was to make an, you know, to, you know, add a bathroom to her house or something like that, that capital expenditure can be used with trust assets. You don't actually
Because you're keeping everything in the trust in that situation. Yeah. Just, you know, there's real estate in the trust and there's liquid assets in the trust, and you're using that liquid assets to improve the real estate. It's still all staying within the trust. There's nothing coming out of the trust in that situation. So, you know, typically that's okay.
It's a good call there, Karen. Thanks for calling. Charles as well. Thank you for the call, Charles. So back to this more complicated fact pattern. So first of all, if you have long-term care insurance out there, that's fantastic. I hope it was a good business decision for you. I hope it works out for you. I hope you have an estate plan besides that. And all things being equal, I'd really like you to avoid probate.
Yeah, and also the long-term care policy you brought up was the, you know, platinum gold
creme
standard, creme de la creme, right? So oftentimes long-term care policies, while most of the time they're great to have if the premiums are reasonable, they don't always protect all your assets, and there still is an opportunity or a need to plan to provide additional protection if you need that care. So
what do you mean, Phil? Hold on a second. My policy pays $200 a day. I'm covered forever, right?
That sounds like a lot of money, right, Dave?
It does.
It does. But the long-term care world is incredibly expensive, right? So I would say, just using the capital region as an example, skilled nursing homes, highest level of care, you're looking, you know, average, I would say $15,000-$16,000
$550 a day.
A month, right? $550 a day. And even home care, you know, if you're getting round the clock care, that could easily be $10,000-$12,000 a month. Those are extraordinary amounts of money.
Right. So my folks, they have a revocable trust. I had nothing to do with it. It was long before I became an attorney. They have long-term care insurance, and that's how they are choosing to deal with both their mortality and their long-term care needs. So there you go. But the other thing I really want to focus on, and I don't know if we'll have enough time, is the idea of a property has ongoing expenses, right? Obviously taxes, insurance, maintenance. And it's not enough to have a document or have a feeling that I'd like it to go to the kids. I want it to stay in the family. A couple times one of the kids said, well, I just, you know, the house has been in the family for 100 years. Mm-hmm. It really needs to stay in the family. And I totally understand that sentiment, but then the logistics come in. Well, and how do we keep it in the family?
And did the other kids share his sentiments? Because you said there was four kids in this fact pattern, right?
And it's an asset, Phil, right?
Yeah.
If it wasn't a house, it's a pile of money if the house and property got sold. So if one of the kids wants it, step one is do more than one child want to have this asset? In this case, it doesn't sound like it.
Right.
Sometimes they're fighting over each other as to who's going to get something. In this case, one of them wants it, but likely can't afford to continue to own it. Number one, because of the carrying cost. Number two, because this is mom's asset. Mom's plan was to treat her four kids equally.
Yeah.
So if the house is, let's say, worth $800,000, $600,000 has to be distributed to these three other siblings to make them whole. That's a new loan. Right. That's financing.
Sure.
That's being credit worthy. That's a lot of different things that go into it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not just enough to say, well, it would be too bad. We got to come up with a plan. So we explored a lot of different options. Everything, Phil, from creating an LLC and having shares. And you know what? If someone wants out, they can get out. But rather than buy out three siblings, maybe he buys out one for now. One of the siblings expressed the fact that their children really love that property and maybe they'd be open to continuing to have some ownership in it. And the whole point of the conversation wasn't for the kids to decide what's going to happen. That's going to be mom's decision.
Yeah.
But it was for mom to get an idea as to who wants what, and rather than her deal with the kids one by one or all in a room where there might be some yelling and chatting, I was kind of like the moderator. Felt like it was meet the press.
Therapist, just, moderator, right?
Yeah, and I was asking, okay, now that's interesting that you said that, and then I turned to someone else, and we're part psychologist.
I did. You know, I was a psychology major
in college.
I was, yeah.
Huh.
And I feel that it does, you know, translate well to this professional, especially in our area. Like you said, a lot of times you're sitting with these families and dealing with family drama and issues, and I like to say I can help with that as well. Non-legal.
Hold on. John, we got to explore this. So what was your major?
Psychology. Well, double major, psychology and criminology and criminal justice, although I didn't pursue that.
No kidding. And look where he is now.
Criminology, I guess, connects to law. When did you decide, Phil, that number one, you wanted to definitely do law, and then number two, that you wanted to get away from criminal law?
Well, I would say sophomore year of college was my first foray into wanting to do law as a profession.
That was the first time you were indicted and you decided you don't want to do criminal law anymore?
Well, no, the criminal law aspect, yeah. Once I was arrested a few times, I So, when I graduated, I think it was a few years after you, Dave, and I had the idea of going into one of the ADA's offices.
He's being too kind, John. A few years. Yeah. Probably 8 years.
He's getting back at you.
The job's very limited, and then when he came out of law school at that time, the opportunities that fell into my lap just didn't translate to the criminal justice type field. But I did get exposure to... At first, very general wills, trusts, and estates, and I tended to gravitate and like those particular matters that came before me, and that's when I decided to pursue that particular area.
Well,
and
that's good, because you're good at it.
It worked out.
So it definitely worked out, yeah. Well, that was nice. A little spotlight on Phil's, you know, I just want to get into his mind for
a
second.
Sure, why not?
See what he was thinking. See what I did there, John?
Yeah.
So, but I want to just get back quickly to what you were talking about and how we can get very creative with those kind of plans. But in my opinion, if the clients are okay with it and open to it, involving the family and the children and having an open discussion can be really helpful and avoid future conflicts. Now, not all our clients are comfortable with their kids knowing what's going on to that level, and that's their decision. But I always say, you know, if you are comfortable, we can get everyone in a room and kind of see where everyone's head is at, because what you don't want to do, usually as a parent in this example, is create future conflict or encourage future conflict, right? And sometimes the way people plan does that unintentionally.
I'm seeing the psychology major coming through here,
here
John, big time. now that I know this, this changes everything.
It all makes sense now, right, Dave? Yeah.
And to echo your point, we can be super creative. So one of the things we talked about, right, child who is really interested in having the property, he's really handy. He's done a lot of work on the property. And I said, well, guess what? That is value.
There's value to the work, for sure.
Right? So maybe there's a way to, you know, split the baby, so to speak, where maybe we're giving him a larger discount if he's buying out, because money's not everything. We all love this house. We'll all get to use the house, even though it's titled more in his favor, and he's going to put a lot of work into it. And because money's not everything, we'll agree to some other number. Now, money is something,
mm-hmm.
you know, and unless mom wants to just give it to son, she's going to want her other children to get their fair share.
They have to want to be fair, right?
But the key is fair. And we say this all the time. It comes up a lot in matrimonial. Equal is not fair. Equitable is fair.
There's a difference.
There's a difference. Just perfect timing there. Have a great weekend, guys. Enjoy your rest
Thanks
of the
Thanks, everyone.
Summer.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.